Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. So that's cool. Okay. Well, joining us again today, Charles Archer. Hello, Charles. Welcome back onto the podcast here on Stockbox. How are you doing?
I'm feeling very well, Mark. How are you? What have you been up to?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah, I was in London earlier in the week meeting with the three AI companies. I think that could be a good or a big focus of 2024, given some of the recent moves in that tech space. I was just thinking while I was there, I've always thought about risks in the mining sector, you know, and I thought, what are the risks in the tech sector? They're very sort of different risks. You know, they're not, it's equally as exciting, the stuff we were talking about. It was all artificial intelligence based and sounds cutting edge. But yeah, It doesn't mean it's a slam dunk, just like the mining stuff, still fraught with risk. But that was a nice little trip I had. And then back to the studio, a couple of interviews with Panther Metals, who, of course, we're going to talk about in a bit, who released some news on their Ebonga project about the graphite discovery. I talked to Oliver Friesen as well earlier in the week on the Garfield, and they were going to touch on that as well. So it's not been an absolutely out the doors start to the year, but I feel it's slowly building up, and it won't be long until we're back sort of being quite full on. How are things your end?
I am. Everything's going wonderfully, obviously, as per usual. But no,
good.
Started a Telegram group a few days ago, and that's, you know, a few thousand people to message back every day or so. Nah, there's only 600 in there so far, but I tried to make it my life easier for myself rather than have like hundreds of individual messages to reply to.
Right, now, put it all now in one group.
Yes. Because what tends to happen is, say Premier African Minerals releases an RNS, and then everybody messages the same questions. So yeah. I thought what we'll do is we'll just, you know, I'll let somebody ask the question, then I'll answer it, and then people won't have to, you know, ask the same question over and over again. And then it turns out you do that, and then it just creates more questions because they feed off each other, and I've created a monster that I can't control. So such is life, but it's okay.
Nice
it's
to fine. Be in demand, though, hey?
Yeah, well, I think it's quite pleasant. It's quite nice that people, you know, value your opinion, which is good. But it's I'm trying to think of the words. It's one of those things where on like a microcosm scale is quite interesting. As like how much do you allow free speech, you know, in a Telegram group, for example, or on Twitter, versus, you know, just letting people say what they want or what they think, or like if someone's like hogging too much of the airtime, do you let them know? It's all kind of fun, and I don't know. Watching it develop in real time is kind of exciting.
Yeah, I bet it is.
And I also think it's quite nice because a lot of investors will message me about like one particular stock or one particular sector, and they're getting exposed to like different sectors or different stocks and different ideas. Small component of my life. And then the problem is I spend my day messaging back because it's more interesting than doing any actual work. And now, tomorrow's looking kind of busy in the calendar, sadly.
Yes, the typical quieter Fridays might not be as quiet for you.
No, not quiet anymore. And, you know, I think we were talking just before we went on there. I was saying how like, yes, you've had a couple of RNSs, but actually being quite quiet, you know, the first week and a half of January, not much has been going on. So I'm hoping we'll get some like interesting, significant market news in the next couple of weeks.
Hopefully.
Sink our teeth into.
Indeed. Yeah. Hopefully. But let's talk then about Panther then, because Panther's been, you know, around for a little while. I've known Darren, quite a while back from my private investing days. I think I met him personally in maybe 2014 at an event before he was in the public markets. And I do really like Darren as a person, as a CEO. In terms of what they're actually doing from the company's point of view, they've got a few things going on, obviously based in Canada. But, you know, what's your take on it? Maybe I'll let you start off and see what questions come to my mind.
Well, I guess, you know, we'll start with the basics, which is, you know, Panther Metals Canada, great jurisdiction, CEO Darren. I only chatted, I think it was last week I spoke to him for an hour and a half or so. It's the first time I've spoken to the man, and he's, we share a lot in common in terms of world outlook and views on mining. And I was quite impressed by his outlook on life. It was quite an interesting chat. I mean, he spent most of the time just chatting about the world events and things. And then we moved on to talk about Panther for about half an hour. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, if you look at the company itself, I think the flagship, you're probably going to say is Ebonga. Then you had the RNS this morning, literally entitled Graphite Discovery Grows Significantly After Ebonga, which, you know, which is the sort of thing you want to read. at a 7 in the morning. I go, you know, makes your day if you're an investor.
Yeah.
But if you actually look at like the actual results, they are actually very good results from an objective perspective. And then the question becomes, obviously, with graphite, obviously you've had China has banned the export of most graphite products. So it's becoming an in-demand critical mineral, even if the price of it is depressed at the moment. And again, you're in Canada and where the project is in this lovely little spot, you know, with plenty of majors around. So I think it's a really good project. Obviously, it's still early days. Even Darren says he's cautious, you know, about the potential scale. But graphite is well known in this area to be pretty abundant. And yes, it was ignored in the past. But now you've got this net zero efforts and decarbonization. It's something that I think will do really, really well. And again, they just need, you know, and Darren's perspective on, you know, the exploration of assets is rather than spending years and years doing trenching and geophysical surveys and magnetic surveys and historical analysis, he just gets in with a drill bit and gets going, which is a riskier approach, but it does mean that you have more exciting RNSs when they do come out. Mm. And then obviously on top of Ubonga, you also have Manitou Lakes and then Dotted Lake. Dotted Lake, I mean, you've got Barrick's Hemlo Gold Mine. And then Winston Lake Superior and the Gecko Copper Mine, various other assets, you know, all around. And then Manitou Lakes, again, you've got the other majors around there. So he's in the right area of the world. And even if you like the Dotted Lake property, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, First Class Metals has an asset next door to them as well. So, yeah, I mean, if you look at Panther Metals, it's market cap is like £3 million ish. Is that right, Mark? Something along those lines.
Mm.
So we were talking about ECR Minerals, which again, a little kind of mining company doing a bit of drilling in Australia. And I was saying how you don't need to find something extraordinary to do, you know, pretty well. But it looks like Ubonga is a project that could be pretty extraordinary as a graphite deposit. And the fact it's in Canada is just, you know, right in smack bang in the middle of exactly where you would want it to be. Like if you could choose where the deposit was, you'd probably pick where it is. Right. So I look at Panther Metals and I go, this is a company which could do really, really well.
Mm.
But again, it's still early days, right? And that's why it's worth £3 million. So it's one of those ones where you buy a few shares and wait a couple of years and hope that, you know, future drilling programs come up with something great.
But what do you think? Sorry. I mean, if we just take Ubonga to begin with there, what's your take on that? Because I know Darren has talked before a lot about sort of the VMS. They made a VMS discovery, and he said before about the next VMS district, let's say. I think it's what he said, the next VMS district in Ontario. And, of course, VMSs are quite well known for, you know, their multi-commodity deposits, aren't they? You've got gold, silver. I'm just looking at my notes, actually, from the other day, but the... Where's the VMSs here? Maybe you know offhand, Charles. But yeah, there's some multi-commodities within a VMS. But the graphite is not sort of one of them. And this is kind of like a new element, perhaps, to you know, to that project. So, I mean, if just taking that area, first of all, and the two sort of elements there to it. First of all, the VMS potential, but then the graphite potential. I mean, what are we talking here? I mean, when we talk about building a new VMS district, what does that mean exactly, do you think?
I don't know what like the full potential of it is. I do think, you know, it's still early days, but if the size of it is what they think it could be, and yes, if it's a VMS district and on top of the graphite, you've also got tons of other like minerals.
Yeah, so in the VMS, I've got it now. So you've got gold, copper, silver, and zinc typically in a VMS.
But I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? You're looking at it and you're going, yes, it could be extraordinary, but then plenty of assets could be extraordinary, and then you do more drilling and then you're like, actually it's quite good, but it's not incredible. But having said that, Darren knows what he's doing, right? And historically has done well, so there's a good chance that even though you are early days, I guess the problem is, right, is that when you I'm trying to think of the words, when you release an RNS to the public, or you talk about a specific system or X, Y, and Z, often you give the public all the information that you can, but there's like indicators which you can't include, but which would encourage you as a geologist I guess is the right way to put it. So you, there's plenty of subjective stuff that, that you're not entirely sure will make a great deposit. But then you look at it and go, actually, you know, this is probably a really good sign. And I think he's just very, very encouraged by the effort.
Yeah, I think so. And when you talk about the graphite, then what do you know about graphite and the deposits and perhaps what the grades there are saying? I mean, it's early stage, as you've said. Darren said it's you know, very encouraging early stage. He told me or told us this morning on an interview that, you know, they're in an area now where there's lots of other trends for graphite. And so, they're probably going to focus on both getting more VMSs, but also the graphite. But I mean, as an early take on that graphite discovery, what does it say to you?
Well, I mean, if you look at, okay, so the geophysical plate modeling, you're looking at, you know, several kilometers, which would be incredible, of like a graphite trend going through the property. But the key thing is, if you look at like the best results, you've got 1 meter at 5.15%, 1 meter at 5.12, 2 meters at 4.16. And then there's another result, which is 27.2 meters at 2.25. But the three top results are all very shallow. That's good and bad news for early exploration, because if it's shallow, then it's very cheap and you have an open pit mining operation. It's very cheap to operate and run. But you also want it to be deeper, because then it, obviously you have a higher mineral resource estimate once you eventually get, you know, the entire resource modeled. So when Darren says it's early days, I mean, I guess what you're saying is there is a potential for a very high quality, very low cost graphite operation amongst the other minerals that you're going to find there. But you need to do more drilling to see how deep the, and also what the true width is, which is essentially not just what the width of it is, but what the actual width is, which is a complex calculation. But yeah, I mean, the basic point is that you have really encouraging early results. You're going to do more drilling. And then I would say suggest that the next set of drills, which they do, they'll do like similar area but deeper, I would guess. That's what I would do anyway. And then if you have similar results but at a slightly deeper level, you're then going to have the right to get really, really excited.
Okay, interesting. Okay, do you want to touch very briefly on the other two, Dotted Lake and Manitou?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Dotted Lake and Manitou, these are two projects that, again, Dotted Lake is surrounded by majors, right? Surrounded. And it's one of those assets where it's something that's worth drilling, something that's worth exploring. And I'm certain they'll get to it. And then Manitou Lakes is, you know, further away, I would say, than the other majors. But then it does mean that if you find something, then it might be the start of something massive that you have to yourself. So I don't know. I mean, if let's, you know, just go for it quickly. So Dotted Lake, yeah. So, I mean, you have the initial drilling campaign for Dotted Lake within 2021, and you've got the soil anomalies, copper, nickel, cobalt. And then, you know, you have Palladium 1, which is in the area, and they did like a big geological model, which is kind of big news. Was it last year, the year before? But essentially supported that there's probably going to be a discovery to be had at Dotted Lake if it's supported by that model that Palladium 1 created. So listen, I mean, this is an asset which is only like 18 kilometers from Hemlo, which is like a massive, massive mine. And it's 100% owned. So there's some upside potential. Now with Manitou Lakes, it's 700 meters of gold bearing strike, was discovered in 2022, and it's north of the Barker mine, which, you know, people in the area will know, it's a gold bearing mine. And again, this is kind of a prospective area, but perhaps where there's less majors around. But past mines and producing mines, you've got Eagle, Manitou, Wobbegoon, Greenstone Belt, and there's several multi-million ounce deposits around. So again, you're exploring in the right place, and they're really, really prospective deposits, but both of those are in the early days. I think Ebonga remains, as you say, with the system it has and with the additional graphite, it remains flagship. And then it's just a question of drilling more. That's it, you know. But then the good news with Panther, because I think that's a key takeaway, they need to drill the assets more. But Panther does, if I'm not mistaken, they own 20% of Fulcrum Metals, and then they have a significant shareholding in, well, if not total, I'm not entirely sure, but a Panther Australia. So if they wish to, they could sell the assets to fund more drilling, which means that if you're going to invest now, you get the upside of the drilling, but none of the risk of dilution.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a big thing for Darren,
isn't it? From talking to him over the last sort of couple of years, that's a big thing for him. I mean, his focus last year was almost to kind of like, not pull back entirely, but to kind of go in the conservation mode and not dilute, not raise a lot of money, and try not to spend too much. And I think he made the right call given what last year was like for the markets in general.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said it to a lot of, you know, CEOs didn't listen to me. I'm just a lowly analyst, but I said it to a lot of them back in 2021. All the money is sloshing around. Just raise some and put it in the bank. And everyone was saying, well, we can't just do that and not do anything with it. You have to have like a reason to do a raise, or investors won't support you. And I'm like, well, you know, you have these like very large valuations. Mining is cyclical. You know, the share prices are going to go down eventually. Just, you know, put a few hundred grand in the bank and save it for a rainy day. Yeah. And a few companies managed to do it, but a lot of them, you know, felt uncomfortable doing it. And now I bet most of them wish that they had done. But yeah.
Well, let's see. I'm looking forward to the year for Panther. It seems like a good start. So let's see what you've got, Darren. I'll leave it at that. Do you want to go on to Golden Met now, just sticking with mining, and then finish with Chill?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. So Golden Metal is, I'm trying to think of the words, Golden. The Oliver, you know, we spoke on the phone a couple of weeks ago. And obviously, Golden Metal is 62% owned by Power Metal Resources, which I know very, very well. I have a research note out on them. So, you know, this is a company that I know pretty well. And now, the interesting thing with Golden Metal is, you know, the key, I would say the flagship remains Pilot Mountain, which is the largest undeveloped tungsten deposit in the United States. Mm. Oliver has been seeking grant funding from the US government for some time now, and I think the general expectation is we're going to hear some news back hopefully within this quarter, or at least in Q2, but I think within this quarter is realistic. And because of the nature of tungsten and its political importance, and the fact that I expect China will impose a tungsten export ban similarly to relatively soon, I think he will get some grant funding within the next couple of months, which will be really exciting. But having said all of that, I mean, we've talked Pilot Mountain forever and ever and ever and ever. But the Garfield project, which you have the RNS out today, the Bedrock Discovery.
Indeed.
You've got really, really promising results coming out here. And I think it just showed, you know, Oliver is like an operator. He, you know, as a geologist, he knows exactly what he's doing. And you've got this high grade, you've got gold, copper, gold, silver mineralization. You're in Nevada, you're in the US, which is like the perfect place to be. And they secured an additional 26 claims. So they've got 65 claims in the project now. And I think it's going to be one of those slow burning dark horses of 2024, where you're going to get the grant funding for Pilot Mountain. And then on top of that, these other assets that they have are going to deliver really, really, really well. So if you look at the samples taken from the project, all of them, if I'm not mistaken, all of them have delivered pretty good gold, silver, copper assay results. So you don't usually expect that. You generally expect to have like a couple of duds, but no, all of them have delivered. You know, you've got five rock samples taken, and the copper grade, on the first sample at 1.89%. is pretty good, but also at the same time, that same sample, 18.35 grams per ton of gold. So yeah, I mean, obviously, again, it's still early days for this asset, for Garfield, but the fact that they're expanding it with more claims, and the fact that they're finding great grab samples, and the fact that this is a company, you know, it's in the Walker Lane mineral belt, where it's hard not to find something there if you have assets there and you know what you're doing. It all points to a very positive year for Golden Metal. I think it's going to do really, really well. And then Oliver, again, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was buying shares, you know, in a substantial number of shares in the kind of 9 to 10p range. I think it's trading for like 10.5p-ish. So there's plenty of positive to go, and then there's other assets that they have as well, including lithium. I think Kibby, they have lithium assets there as well. So yeah, I mean, Golden Metal is previously the entire investment case hinged on getting US government grant funding for Pilot Mountain. And now their other assets are proving to be more and more valuable. And the question is how they're going to fund them and get, you know, but the good news is, again, like Panther Metals, gold and metal, they're in a different part of the world. But in Nevada and the US is kind of like the perfect spot to be if you find a discovery, because there's all of the the politics are very pro mining.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all of the skilled labor force that you need. There's plenty of majors in the region who will happily enter a joint venture if that's something that's necessary. So yeah, I think they're going to do really well. I mean, when was the last time you spoke with Oliver? Well, it must have been relatively recently, I guess.
It was Tuesday morning. Yes.
Well, there you go then. Yeah, yeah.
Because I think they had the news out on the Tuesday morning. I interviewed him from where I was in London at the time. I wasn't in the studio, but that was when the news came out. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because Pilot Mountain was the flagship, and I did sort of ask him, you know, does that mean this focus is going to shift to Garfield? And he kind of laughed a little bit, didn't you know, kind of.
Well, I think the problem, not the problem, what's the words here, is you need that grant funding to get cracking on Pilot Mountain, right?
Because it's so big.
Because it's so big. And also because you want to get the government involved, and also because it's one of those where if you look at the asset and the importance of tungsten, it seems very, very likely that you're going to get that grant funding, right?
Mm.
So while you're waiting for that, or you apply for the grant funding, right? And it generally takes like 6 to 9 months to get an answer once you've done everything. And you can't just sit and twiddle your thumbs, and you can't justify spending company money on Pilot Mountain when you could get grant funding for it. So you have to do other assets. And yes, obviously Oliver's a very, very good geologist, and yes, you know, they've picked prospective claims, but he's also been very lucky to find these very good results at the various other projects. You know, and for context, if you took Pilot Mountain out of the equation, these would still be very, very good results that you're getting, even if they are also very early stage.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice, but you know, you don't just want a one trick pony, do you, either, with the company? You've got two very good potential. Well, so limit it to two. It could be, obviously.
There's more.
Yeah, there's more projects there. But you know, certainly the early stage. And you know what? Oliver's a very measured chap as well, you know. I was speaking to someone, I think it was Steve Zeary, actually. Also, so it's the correct way to say his name is Steve Sherry, of Oscillate PLC, and we were having a bit of a chat before Christmas there. We were talking about how things are shaping up for the new year and what the year's looking like, and we both generally agreed that it feels like it could be a much more favorable market generally. I think not just specifically for mining, but you look at the risk on like Bitcoin, for example, and it's an election year. I think there's a few things lining up. You look at the hype in AI, you just get the feeling generally it's going to be better. And he sort of mentioned that some of the CEOs he had his eye on who he liked and almost wanted to take inspiration from. He mentioned Jason Brewer with Marula and the other companies there. He mentioned Oliver Friesen and also ECR as well. And I just thought, you know, yeah, there's a few things here, because you've got some quite young, dynamic, fresh CEOs who, if one sensible, they don't seem part of the old guard, if you want to use that term, but also aligned with shareholders, you know. And I think it's becoming more, you're seeing a lot more now on the news, you know, certainly that goes out either from companies or from us, for example. There's more kind of, it looks like it's more transparency there. There's more real reality there rather than, you know, smoke and mirrors. I think it's fair to say it's so
tricky, isn't it? I mean, the thing is that when you're talking about as a CEO, the PR that you can do and the like chatting to investors you can do, you can't give out any sensitive information, but you can fill in the gaps between RNSs. You know, and obviously that's what Stockbox specializes in, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, when you do these CEOs.
That's what we try and do. Yeah. But you see, when it comes to Oliver Friesen, there was a statement in the RNS that was very bold. And I actually asked him, I said, that's a very bold statement. You know, you're pinning your name to the mast there. And he said, I won't make these statements as I really believe it. And you know what? I think he's genuinely feels that the way he said in the RNS, he's genuinely very excited about the potential at Garfield. So you've got, we already know the potential at Pilot Mountain. You get that grant funding in. Woof, brilliant.
Yep. Well, indeed. And Garfield is, you know, it's funny how, you know, okay, so this was like the side project, and then maybe it's
Yeah.
not in the end, you know. But then that's the joy of exploring, right? This is the thing, like, this is what we're all in for. You're all hoping to get like a monster deposit and, you know, gravy. But his exact words were, I can say from my experience and understanding of the project, geologically and geographically, I consider Garfield holds the potential for a major metal discovery.
That's the
You
quote.
know,
That's the
and
quote.
I, that's the quote. And you know, Oliver, you know, I don't know his exact age, but you know, he's not 84. Let's say
No.
that. No. So, you know, you can't say stuff like that without it coming back to haunt you in the
Yeah,
future if you're wrong. Now,
exactly.
obviously, no one's going to hold him to, you know, to a post and nail him to a cross if, you know, if it doesn't prove to be correct, because at the end of the day, you need to get some drilling done and find out. But having said that, he's also got masses of experience. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So I think it's really, I don't know, it's really difficult for me, because on the one hand, having spoken to Oliver and also just knowing his work history and the stuff he's been up to, he knows what he's talking about, and he's very excited. Do you know, actually, I was literally saying to you, what, like 5, 10 minutes ago, talking about how, and this was planned for Metals with Darren, how there's certain geological features you can't put in an RNS, but which, you know, kind of show you that you've got something really special. That's the sort of thing that he'll be talking about. He can say, from my experience, you know, just generically, we've got something good here that we can't really, it's very difficult to put into an RNS and like in so many words. But you just look at the geology and go, wow, this is amazing. The fact he said that, you know, it makes me really excited, and it'll be really fun watching how it develops in 2024. Because in my mind, and again, okay, you might not get the grant funding, nothing's ever guaranteed, but I think you it's very likely that you will. And thereafter, okay, you'll get the share price rise and yada yada yada. But then you can kind of go, right, this Garfield property and Golconda and the other ones, which are like, and Kibby, which are all looking really promising.
Yeah.
Having got the grant funding story out of the way, we can really push this story as well.
Indeed.
And
And
yeah, which, you know, that,
he did a technical one of his technical videos, and that went out.
yeah,
I
that
haven't
was
actually
super
watched it
cool.
yet, but
Yeah.
I'm sure that's very good.
Yeah, well, I think it's I'm trying to, like, last year, like late last year, I did an article. It was like 5,000 words or so about how, like, you analyze an asset, a mining asset, and it was really, really super popular, because a lot of people don't, you know, actually know how to do the basics. And and having Oliver come on, you know, and do a video for like 12 or 13 minutes, he doesn't have to do that, you know, like he's the CEO, he can just say it's great. But actually taking the time to explain it. And the best thing about that video was that my 10-year-old could watch it if he wanted to. I'm not sure he would, but he would be able to understand what Oliver is saying. You know, so he's also one of these people who've got a talent for explaining complex topics to investors who perhaps won't be able to follow along. And you know, I include myself at times in that, because yes, I know a fair bit about mining, but I'm not a qualified geologist or geophysicist or geochemist. Yeah, neither are you. And you know, so yeah, I don't know. I'm a big fan of him as a CEO and also his company. So I'm wishing them all the best.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you very much. Let's finish off with Chill then. Chill Brands, a different company. Not one that I'm very
Yeah.
familiar with, Charles, I'll be honest.
Oh, that's fair enough. I mean, I thought it'd be I just released an article on it today, so I thought it'd be good to have a quick chat. But it's
Indeed.
I described it, and I'll stick to it. It's the most Marmite company on the AIM market at the
The
moment.
most Marmite company.
Well, I think Premier African Minerals might take that crown, you know, back and forth. But given how popular it is, yeah. But it's one of those ones where investors who are in are very much in and really like the stock, and the people who disagree are also quite fairly vocal about their
Okay.
opinion. Which, you know, when I explain the investment case, will make sense to you. A lot of it is about the volatility. It was trading for around 13p in May last year. It's now about 4.5p, which is doubled year over year, but obviously a slide since May. But the basic thing, okay, so you've got the product. It's got various products, but the key product is a Chill Zero, which is a zero nicotine vaping product. So think like a zero alcohol wine or zero alcohol beer, you think wouldn't be have a market for, but there's clearly a massive growing market. Chill Zero, it's got these zero nicotine vapes. And you get way more puffs or way more usage out of their vape than you would a typical vape by a competitor. And it's extremely good value for customers. Now, the interesting thing is the vapes launched in August of last year, so that they're kind of like newish. But they're in 150 WH Smith travel shops. They're in Morrison Supermarket. They're in Heathrow Airport. They're on the chill.com website. They're on the Amazon UK website. And Amazon doesn't allow the sale of nicotine vapes on its site. So they're pretty much the only vapes that you can get on Amazon.
Oh, really?
Well, it's not the only ones, but they're at the top when you search nicotine-free vape, for example. So they're doing really well there.
Okay.
And they're on various secondary sites of Vape Local, for example. And then they're expanding in the US with Smoker Friendly. Now, so here's the thing, right? There's a few things to break down. The first is that Jonathan Swan, who is a high net worth investor, many people know him from various other companies, but he owns 6.5% of Chill. And he just gave Chill £1 million supply chain debt financing facility with a monthly interest rate of just 2%. Mm-hmm. To get them kind of over the line to profitability. And the key thing to understand is that, you know, there's massive, massive, massive growth. So, you know, Chill Zero was only in 200 independent shops in kind of August, September-ish 2023. And now it's in nearly 2,500 locations in multi-branded chains. Mm-hmm. This is a company where I look at it and I go, okay, so there's massive, massive growth. And now the question is, what are the reorder rates for the vapes? How much revenue are you going to get in? What's your profitability going to be like? What's your margin like as you experience economies of scale? They've done really well at protecting themselves against potential future legislation, putting money into recycling. They will not brand and do not market to children at all. No inappropriate flavors, no immature design elements. And they're also developing reusable and rechargeable products just in case there's kind of like a legal backlash. But the thing is, it's a zero nicotine vape. So just to have this economic moat, yes, I suppose it's something that could get copied, but it's first in the marketplace. It's super popular. And I think they're going to do really, really, really well. Now, the question is obviously, as I said before, what are your revenue? What are your profit margins going to be? Well, all of this massive launch into like the larger chains is all starting this month. So you're going to find out in about 6 months' time. By then, the share price will, in my opinion, be a lot higher than what it is today. And then you'll get those numbers and then it will go, you know, kind of big. And then hopefully there'll be a buyout and, you know, everyone walks off into the sunset. But I don't know. Have you ever spoken to CEO Callum?
No, never.
Maybe. No. I mean, I got another young-ish CEO. I don't know his exact age. But, you know, this is like he's young, he's hungry, he wants to, you know, make an impression.
And it's just a one product, is it then?
No. They've got tons of products in development. That's just a flagship. They also have chill.com, which is like an e-commerce site where they also sell like third-party brands for you know, and take a cut of it. And so they've got chill.com, they on Amazon and in all sorts of shops. And, you know, it was kind of fun. I posted the article today and someone posted a photo because they were leaving Heathrow Airport of like the Chill Zero Nicotine vapes, like in a cabinet. And I was just thinking, I was saying, you know, it's so cool when like an idea in retail like comes to real life. And, you know, you're going to start seeing these places in supermarkets.
Was that an investor or just a random member of the public did that?
Oh, well, either an investor or a random member of the public. Or someone just commented on the post, just, you know, with a picture.
Right,
I've seen, you know, these are in, they haven't been before. And it's kind of like super fun.
Yeah, seeing primary African minerals in the flesh for the first time.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I was thinking in mining, right? I don't know how possible this is, but like... it would be really cool because my wife complains about all of my small cap investments, except when they make money and then suddenly it's her brilliant idea. But like it would be, say for example, you're investing in like Greatland Gold, for example, ECR Minerals or, you know, all in gold and metal. I wish you could take the actual metal as a dividend rather than money. How cool would it be to like get a little gold bar
from
a gold mine and then you could make like jewelry out of it, you know, for yourself? Like how much cool. Imagine if you want to propose and you're like, here is some gold from that investment that I did in this company.
Cool, isn't it?
You know, yeah. I mean, that's what I obviously I don't think.
Well, I've got a little spodumene sample and a little lepidolite sample sat on my desk. I'm not sure I can make jewelry out of it. Maybe I could try.
Where was it from Zulu potentially? or somewhere else?
It was from Zulu, yeah.
And it was from the so you got the first delivery ever out of a company. Well done, Mark.
The first was DSO, I suppose. Yeah, it's not processed.
Yeah. Did you pay the tax? Let's hope not. But anyway, I don't know. But I think it's one of the fun things. And it used to be not in the not too distant past that you used to get like shareholder benefits. So like I'm a Whitbread shareholder in my SIP. So I get free breakfast whenever I want when I stay at a Premier Inn hotel.
Really?
Because I think I bought like two grand worth of shares.
What, and what,
a few years ago when they were cheap.
How do you prove that? You have something that
you just have to email investor relations and they send you like a certificate and then you just flash it up on your phone.
It's what, the same when you go to a Premier Inn, you just flash up I'm a shareholder in Whitbread and
you get
free
breakfast. Often you depending on the location you have to book a room, but sometimes you can just get a breakfast and obviously it costs them pennies and keeps shareholders loyal. If you invest in like various travel companies, you can get like free or very subsidized holidays. And if you're invested in, is it Penguin Books? I think you can get like 50% off all their books, which I think it was Penguin Books. It was definitely one of the publishers because I remember buying shares. This is years and years ago when I was doing my master's degree in law, and there were specific legal books that were really, really expensive and you could never get them on sale. But I bought the shares in the company that published the books. Used the 50% discount, bought the books, and then sold the shares, which was one of my more brilliant ideas. But whether that's doing that. But the point is, in like mining companies, it would be really cool if we had like benefits for shareholders, which included, you know, every year you get an ounce of gold sent to your address, which might be really expensive, only if you want to, obviously.
Mm.
But it's the sort of thing which I think, you know, people would really like. And that's kind of like marketing campaign that would do really well.
Mm. But, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Really it would, cool. Wouldn't it? I think it'd
and
be
also,
super cool.
It like, gives you a closure, doesn't it, as well? Because, I mean, we were talking a little bit about Premier Africa Minerals there very briefly. Mm. When that finally does get into production, it's kind of the end of the story, isn't it? I mean, it will hopefully continue. But in terms of the development story and the excitement of following that from an investor's point of view, it's kind of it's delivered. So wouldn't it be nice to have like something that kind of reminds you of that? That's not just pounds in your bank.
Yeah. A little bit of spodumene, a little bit of lipid light, just, you know, in a glass case on the shelves.
Yeah, that you can look at and reminisce of the highs and the lows of
highest highs and the lowest lows. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Prems. Let's talk about it for 5 minutes. No, I mean, it's one of those, isn't it? Like, George was very, very, very bullish and start with very, very bullish last year. And then OEMs are very, very bullish. And it hasn't delivered, but you've got this new mill coming in, you know, this month, which, you know, hopefully is going to sort any and all issues out. You're talking about production at the end of February. It's all extremely exciting. I don't know. I mean, but then at the same time, George used the word expensive in the latest RNS, and that implies that he wants to get some more shares. But to do that, he'd probably need to call a new meeting. So, you don't know. I think it's one of those things where like, again, like I said to you before, it's all going right down to the wire again. And the good news is, I mean, maybe not good news if you're already an investor, but if you're listening and you're not an investor, the share price is around 0.2p-ish. So it's, you know, compared to like historically, compared to where it's been over the past year, it's very cheap. And there is a scenario in the not too distant future where delivery happens in a few weeks' time of 4,000 tons of SC6, and then everything's gravy and the share price shoots up and everyone's happy again. And I guess the problem is, obviously, you've missed a fair few deadlines. It'll be one of those things that when it does happen and the deadline does get hit, you know, people are like, oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it actually happened. But that someone made me laugh. Someone made a comment the other day that it was like an episode of Grand Designs where you have a budget and you've got a timeline, but actually, you know, that it's all obviously, you know, over budget and over timeline, but it will eventually work in the end. And this is the thing, right? We know the spodumene is in the ground because you've had the drilling and you had the drill results. Recent ones came out, you know, a few days ago. So you know the spodumene is in the ground. You know the plant has been built. If CanMax was going to walk, they would have done it ages ago, ages and ages ago. So I think it will work. It will eventually work, whether it's in the next few weeks or whether it's a couple of months away. And shareholders, most of them, you know, you're just going to sit tight and cross your fingers and hope. And eventually it will deliver and everything will be gravy. And it will be a wonderful, wonderful time when it does and everyone, you know, will be happy. But
indeed.
I think the thing with it, with this particular share, is that when the share price is doing really well and really high and the company is operating well and everyone's optimistic, everyone's super optimistic. And when it's not doing well, everyone is extremely bearish. And it's kind of like you get kind of whiplash with the retail investor base who are kind of like, oh no, it's the end of the world, or oh no, it's going to be great. Whereas in reality, it's a high risk, high reward company where there are positive and negative aspects, and you have to balance those when you're making a decision. I think, you know, as I've said before many times, that once first production starts, it won't be very long before you get a buyout offer proposed at a significant premium to where we are now. And I think that first production will eventually start. And I think that first production could, you know, they're saying end of February, it might take a little longer, but it will definitely be relatively soon. So you've got to look at that and add it all up and go, okay, at 0.2p, is this a good time to invest? I venture, yes, it is. But again, it's exactly the same as I've said every time we've done these podcasts. It's a high risk company. And don't invest if you're not prepared to enjoy a roller coaster of up and down every single, you know, what day, month, week, and year.
Indeed.
Which has been, yeah, super fun. You've got to enjoy it too, haven't you, Mark, watching it bounce around?
Oh, yeah. I've got to enjoy it. Yeah, of course.
Enjoy it. I don't know.
I would agree, though. I mean, around now, it's you know, without risk, it's not without risk, but it's not a bad buy at this price, is it? Average
no,
down
not
or,
at all.
Or get in, you know? I mean, yeah, I think it's
okay,
a good opportunity.
So let's talk. I mean, like, was it mid-2021, Prem did a placing at 0.2p, so its current share price. And yes, I know there's been dilution, but they did a £1 million placing to do some, like, exploration of Zulu a couple of years ago. And back then, you just had a big, you know, field of dirt in the ground, and that was it. And now you have a plant which is, you know, theoretically on the verge of production. You've got an offtake contract with a, you know, a giant Chinese major in the form of Canmax. You've got a potential buyout opportunity on the horizon. You've got grades, you know, hand sorting, yes, and I know, you know, it's just hand sorting, but actually, you know, grades potentially of the sorters will work over 7%, which is world leading. There's so many positive factors that even though I think it's really important to consider the risks, there is also, you know, plenty of positives and plenty of possible rewards. So, yeah, I don't, like I say, I mean, at this price point, it's looking attractive. And the only thing that's going to have people kind of like holding off on the button is that George has used that word expensive in the RNS. And therefore, you would expect there to be, you know, a meeting and then one more placing before you get to profitability. Now, the one thing I'll find super interesting about that, and again, you know, I'm just predicting, I don't know, but I'm guessing. Because obviously, if you do get production end of February and you run out of money end of February, then you get paid at gate, so you should be fine and not need a placing, in theory. But if there's any delay, you need to make sure you can account for that, which means that there probably will be a call for more shares. And if George asks for like $1 billion more or $2 billion more to just get them over the line, that'll be seen as a really positive indicator. Whereas if he asks for like $5 or $6 billion more, that'll kind of scream to the market, oh, we're not confident that we're going to deliver in time. So the number of shares that get called for is, you know, going to be super important. It, you know, if he does call for EGM, or he's going to go, no, we're going to make delivery. We're not going to need it, which would be a really positive outcome as well. But I think you have to be cautious in these markets, and especially when you're like kind of so close to the line, I think he may be forced to call an EGM. But I don't know. I think all we can do now with the mill starting to get delivered is kind of wait and see.
That's all we can do, isn't it? Wait and see.
Have a whiskey, wait for this. Oh, go to the Winchester, have a pint, wait for this all to blow over. But, you know, I think, you know, a year from now, I think everything will be completely fine. And, you know, I was saying this, you know, over the past of a year or 2 years, when I was covering Pilbara Minerals in Australia, which obviously did really, really well, partially because the lithium price went so high. But, you know, they started production and they had plenty of issues. And their share price, even after they started production, went down 75% because they had so many issues with their plant and so many issues with, like, regulation and stuff. And so I'm kind of seeing the same sort of thing here. And the thing is that you kind of think, oh, we're going to build a plant and then start production. And it's like, no, there's always like some kind of hiccup or problem or regulatory issue or plant problem or AOM or like equipment malfunction or, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is. So it doesn't always go up in a straight line, but eventually everything will be running smoothly. And you're just hoping, you know, like hopefully you'll either have like production and dividends or you'll just have a sale of the asset and then away you go into the sunset. But at 0.2p, I think your risk profile is very good.
Yes. Yeah, I would tend to agree on that. Maybe I'll even be tempted myself to take some.
Will you? I don't know. The thing is, I would I average more in? Maybe. I think it's, for me personally, I think it's, you a lot of people are hovering over the buy button and looking at a kind of wait and see approach. And then the problem is that you might miss your opportunity.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Nobody knows now. It's in the fate of the plant. Does it work? The mill goes in and then does it work? I think that will be the question everyone has on their list.
Yeah, that's the big next one, isn't it? Yeah.
It'd be nice
to get an update as well on how things are going at the pit as well. I'm sure I'll be asking you that question next time. Must have been a lot more opened up since we last spoke.
Yeah, indeed. Well, this is one of the things, right? It was alluded to in the RNSs, and like, I said it when the old mill. The mill from RHA Tungsten went in. I think, you know, and again, this is just my perception. I'm not all knowing or all seeing, but it seemed clear to me that the ore itself wasn't sufficiently high quality to generate the SC6. So they were like, okay, what we'll do is while we blast through the rock to get to the higher quality ore that we know is there from previous drilling, we'll take out this mill, we'll put in the new mill, and then when the new mill gets put in, we will, having, you know, opened up the pit more, we've now got to the quality ore that we need. So you're kind of crossing your fingers and going, right, we've got the ore that we need, we've got the big mill that we need, the OEM, the manufacturers of the sorters are on site, or have been sorting everything out. So everything's just going to go. And, you know, how great would it be to just say, okay, we've now produced our first 1,000 tons this week? You know, that would be amazing for the markets, amazing for confidence just in general.
And that's what we're watching out for, isn't it? I look forward to the day I can do that interview with the man himself.
I think you know, a lot of mining investors investing in Prem, you know, for the story and for like the entertainment factor and the enjoyment of it, obviously to make money. And if Prem does deliver and does succeed, I think you'll also see like a wider effect on the market. Because a lot of people will say, hang on, this was a risk asset. It eventually paid off, even though it jumped around a bit. And now it's worth investing in risk assets again. I think it will, you know, it'll have a cascading effect, especially if you pay out like a large special dividend to shareholders who then have to go and invest that somewhere else. Or not, you know, invest in George's next venture. But I think he's not a spring chicken, sadly. Maybe this is his last hurrah. Boy, you know, rise well, up into the sunset.
Good one.
Yeah, let's bloody hope so. I think I've been writing about it for like years and years, but you know, obviously been invested since kind of mid 2019, September 2019. So I think, you know, if you've been invested for a long, I know people have been invested longer than that even. So if you have been invested that long, you don't deserve anything, you know, from the markets. The markets give it, from the markets take it away. But but you do kind of hope and go, you know, having put that amount of effort and investment and focus and time in, you want to see a payout because it will feel very earned. I think this is one of the things, you know, who was it? One of our dear political leaders, I mean, was it Jeremy Hunt, was talking about dividends and like capital gains being unearned income. And it's like, on AIM, it's not unearned income. You bloody sweat for it. You sweat for it every day. So,
yeah,
Yeah, you do. I mean, if you put it into like a legal and general tracker, you know, and you get your 8% dividend a year, no, you're not really sweating. You'll get your money. But if you want to pick a junior resource company and hope to get, you know, 10 times, 20 times, 30 times return, yeah, it's not fun. Some of it is fun, but it can be very stressful. Don't invest more than you can afford to lose, but also, you know, it's very hard not to enjoy the story as well.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you, Charles, again. Very good chat. So thank you for your time. And yes. I think we're going to do these fairly regularly, aren't we? At least once a month, if not twice.
Once
if we
a
can
month or so.
Fit
yeah,
it
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
More stuff
it would be
going
great.
On.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were talking about companies to talk about beforehand. So anyone who's listening in the comments, if there's any companies that
indeed.
You know, you think are new or exciting, you want us to chat about, just let us know. And more than happy to talk about most things, pretty much. Say, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good call, actually. Yeah, anyone who wants us to cover, or, you know, Charles or me to cover a certain company, yeah, let us know. I know, Charles, you have your Ask Charles Telegram group. I'm open there on Twitter personally, or you can message Stopbox and one of the team will pick it up. But yeah, there's a number of ways to contact us. Good idea. But yeah, thanks, Charles, and we'll chat later.
Yeah, indeed. Bye, Mark.